Hello, and welcome to the Mortgage and Real Estate Podcast by Pinnacle. I'm Chris Giannino, and I am joined today by my brother Pete Giannino. And we are also joined by Kathy Davis of Davis and Travellini LLC. We are meeting today at the Bar Association Metropolitan St. Louis downtown. And they have a meeting periodically, so we decided to just do our podcast here today and talk real estate and investment properties and other things regarding real estate in St. Louis and other areas with Kathy. Kathy, thank you for joining us today. What's going on? How are you doing?
It's my pleasure to be here. I'm doing great. I was in court in Division 28 in the city of St. Louis all morning helping another attorney from my firm with our eviction docket. So that was a busy morning. And then I came over here because they promised to give me lunch.
I like it. Well, we're sitting downtown, like Chris mentioned. We're in the BAMSL headquarters, and what a beautiful space they have here. Done a nice job with this opportunity on 4th Street. And you said you were in the City of St. Louis court. That's just down the road, right?
Correct. Pretty close. 11th and Market. Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been in that building, but great job they've done in there, too. I'm glad it's still standing.
Yes. Well, this building where BAMSL is lovely. The security building, the lobby is very impressive.
Oh,
very nice.
Very much so. Like many buildings downtown.
Yeah.
It's you could tell it's rich in history, and the inside and the outside. And you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on too is you're not new to real estate. You've been around it quite a bit. You're also not new to having a microphone in front of you. So you know, you were on air when you spent some time in Alaska. But you know, you've been around it. You're very involved in St. Louis real estate and in the Bar Association when it comes to real estate. You've been known throughout the industry as just very professional. A word that came up a lot is honest, just high quality, genuine individual. So we'd love to just ask you some questions about real estate and some of your experiences, and you know, just take it from there. Basically, you said you just got out of court today, but.
What's that mean?
You said very nice words. Can you send this to my mother?
It's already online. All she has to do is look it up.
Okay.
But just people online have very, you know, they hold you in a high regard. So it's easy to find. Well, yes, we'll send it to your mom. I know how that goes.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just make sure we got the right Kathy Davis here. Yeah, we do. We do. Indeed. Okay. Kathy, tell us how you got into the legal profession, first of all.
You know, as soon as I found out what a lawyer was, I knew that that's what I wanted to be. My father, who was a career physician and taught medical school at Pitt and then came to St. Louis and taught at SLU, he was a vice chair of internal medicine, I think would very much have liked me to be a doctor, but that seemed like real work, and lawyer seemed like a much better gig. I like the idea. I mean, people laugh about lawyers, and of course there's jokes, but I like the idea of you get a problem, someone comes to you with a problem, and you solve their problem. I mean, it's very rewarding, I think. Rather than doctor, like, you screw up, someone's going to die. It's not good.
Yeah, and, you know, just your brief words there kind of reminded me, and this isn't about me, but it reminded me that how I got to know you. I told Chris that you may not remember this because I was... you know, green off the truck, but one of my first cases, you were my opposing attorney, and now here we are, you know, 20 years later, talking behind the mic together, and so I'm very gracious, you know, to you for coming here.
I hope it was a good experience for you.
It was a learning experience,
okay.
Let's put it that way. So just to back up a minute, you came from Pittsburgh?
I did. I grew up in Pittsburgh.
And so, and then because of your dad's move, your family moved here, is that?
Yes. And so I was in college when they moved here, but I found them. And I decided to come to law school here.
Excellent. You went to Washington University?
I did.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And so your firm is located in Brentwood?
In Brentwood.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit where that is and who's involved in that.
I love Brentwood. It's our building is located in the Hanley Industrial Court, and it's very convenient to get to Clayton and to get downtown, and really to get to St. Charles and Jefferson, too. We're right there, close to 40. So we have kind of a courtroom-based practice, so we're going to courts all the time, so that's good. And we have a lot of parking. The clients can come and park for free. They don't have to find a meter, and they find that convenient. So it's really kind of a fancy shed, but it's not a big downtown high-rise with, you know, the marble lobbies. But I'm very practical, and I like having a lot of space for a smaller amount of money than I would pay in a center like downtown or Clayton. And I like it that it's convenient for my clients to get there.
It's at essentially at Manchester and Hanley, that area?
A little bit north of there. It's closer to 40 than it is to Manchester, I think.
Closer to 40, okay. Yeah, very convenient spot.
Very convenient, yeah.
I think my first job was in that same industrial court. Not as an attorney. I don't think I worked at Kenrick's.
That was just Joe.
I think I worked for a company called The Book Lady.
Oh, The Book Lady. Yeah, that was high end.
Yeah, I still have that retirement plan invested well.
Yes.
So in your space, you have how many lawyers there?
Well, I have my firm, which is myself and my partner, Christine Travellini, and our associate, Chris Bosler. And then the firm of Van Dillen and Flood shares space with us. And a couple of solo guys, Greg Anderson and Donald Folk. And then we actually have a couple of spaces available right now, and we'd love to have some additional lawyers come in, and we would be able to give them business.
To describe what you're looking for, then, in that regard. You're talking about office space available in your suite, so to speak?
In my building, yeah. We rent the whole building. So it's in our building, and it's just a couple of large offices. I probably should know the square footage, and I don't, but...
Well, what a great opportunity. So you don't have to be far away in downtown or at the high prices of Clayton, but right. You have easy access to both.
Exactly.
I know you don't want to narrow down your selection mm-hmm. criteria, but anyone in particular that would be prime candidates?
Oh.
I mean, you know, you'd like attorneys, of course, right?
Yes.
And it'd be a chance to refer business back and forth among each other.
It would, yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your practice then. You today were in the, what docket were you at today?
I was in the Division 28 docket in the city of St. Louis, which is where we do our city evictions.
Evictions, okay.
And my firm does a lot of evictions. And so we are what they call bulk filers. So in our main counties, we go to a particular judge on a particular day. So in the city, we're on Wednesday in Division 28 in front of Judge Wittiest. In the county, we're actually kind of switching around right now because there's a judge vacancy to be filled, but we go to the county on Thursday, St. Charles on Friday, and Jefferson on Tuesday. So,
no stranger to the courtroom.
No, we're in court a lot.
So when you say eviction, so you're talking, you're representing the owner or the owner of the building?
Or the management company or, you know, that kind of thing. Missouri law allows us to sue the eviction in the name of the owner or their agent. So if you're managing a building for someone, we might sue in your management company name. Or we might sue in the owner's name, but it just depends.
So what commonly comes up to where someone is wondering, hey, you know, do we have what we need to be able to evict or not? Like what, I mean, that's the most basic of questions, but that's the first thing that would come to somebody's mind if they're in that situation and they're not familiar with the background. So what would, you know, constitute the beginning of that if you needed to start the eviction proceedings?
Well, there's several kinds of evictions. Let's talk about the most common, which is a rent in possession. And that's covered by Chapter 535 of the Missouri statutes for those who like to go to the books. With the rent in possession, you have to have a landlord-tenant relationship between the parties, mm-hmm. and the tenant has to have not paid the rent. In a rent in possession, you can only sue for rent and contractual charges, attorney's fees, court costs, and possession. You can't sue for damages to the property and that kind of thing. In a rent in possession, if the tenant brings the rent current by the court date, then you can't evict them. So this is the kind of eviction that's the most common. It's the kind of eviction the tenant's fallen behind. Maybe they have gone radio silent to you. Maybe they're telling you, need more time. And you just want to have that on file to ensure that you can get your property back in case they don't come through and pay. So that's the most common kind.
What are the, well, how has the eviction process changed over the years? I mean, is it still, because it's outside of my comfort zone, but is it an efficient way to manage a property going through an eviction process?
Well, I think that, you know, you want to not evict people if possible, because you're going to have an additional cost for the attorney and the court costs. You might not ever collect that money. The tenant might be doing damage. So it's important for property managers and owners to do good screening up front so that they don't have to do this very often. But the logistics of it, the reality of it is that some people have to get evicted. They don't manage their money well, or they have a bad personal event, or they lose their job and that kind of thing. And they can't hang in there, so they have to get evicted.
No. Oh, go ahead. Please.
Yeah, if it's a rent and possession and there's no other issues with the tenant, they just want to get the rent or have them move. You know, a lot of the people manage to get it together and get the money and stay. We've obviously had some interesting wrinkles over the past few years with the pandemic. And we've had, you know, courts that shut down for a while and then wouldn't let us do evictions for a while, would let us get judgments but not execute on them. There was pandemic rent relief for some people. It was interesting to me how some tenants just didn't even apply for it. And there were also some landlords who I thought maybe should have been more open to taking those payments than they were. But now that pretty much is over. There are still some rent relief programs in the St. Louis area, but it's not like the big whoosh of money like the pandemic was. And we can also go to court now and put people up.
Now, is that after one missed payment? Like, is that common?
Well, technically, under Missouri law, it's just that the rent has to be past due. So, yeah, if your rent's due on the first, it's technically past due on the second. We don't necessarily recommend that. We do recommend for landlords to have a specific day, which is their drop-dead day. And the reason for that is we don't want them to get accused of discriminating or favoring one tenant over the other because they gave Pete until the 20th, but then they gave Chris until the 30th. And, you know, so we like them to be consistent in their approach to it. And I would say most landlords will pull the trigger between the 15th and the 30th of the month.
Do you see now, I want to go back. That was one example of the eviction and the lawsuit that you were talking about. And I know there's others that we were going to get right into. But do you ever see things the other way around as well? I mean, just from having conversations from maybe business owners that are leasing space where they believe the landlord's not keeping up on this. Or maybe they have a restaurant where the ceiling's leaking really badly and it's negatively impacting their business. And, you know, I guess it comes down to how the lease reads and who's responsible for what. But do you represent clients in that aspect as well? And what have you seen when it comes to the reversal of the tenant seeking damages from a landlord?
We don't generally represent tenants. It works out to be too much of a conflict for my firm, so we just operate on the side of the landlords. But we do see counterclaims sometimes or complaints that the tenant will make. Sometimes it's just something that they're saying so that they don't seem like a bad person because they haven't paid. Sometimes those are legitimate things. I would recommend to anyone, particularly a business owner tenant, that they get representation if they have a counterclaim or something that they think is a set off and that kind of thing. And I also think that it's a mistake for them to stop paying the rent.
Why is that?
Because they can get evicted. And once it's filed, it's on CaseNet. And CaseNet is like diamonds. It's forever. You can get, in some circumstances, a raising of the security level on CaseNet so that the public can't see it. But that's not always granted pursuant to Supreme Court rules. And so that's going to be on CaseNet. Anybody and their brother, the two brothers here, can look that up. And says, anybody ever sued Pete or Chris? We can type the names in. They can find out about, you know, any embarrassing interaction you've had with a court, let alone an eviction. And the landlords are onto that, and a lot of them will check that before they rent to you. And if you have an eviction, certainly more than one on your record, they're going to say, yeah, no.
Well, I think that's something people would be interested in too, is who's granting the exception on whether it can be exempt from CaseNet.
That's a higher pay grade than me, but it's all over the place in different circuits in Missouri. Hmm. That'd be a good future program, I guess.
There you go.
CaseNet. I mean, CaseNet's very interesting, and as you probably know, starting in July of last year, they opened up CaseNet so that everyone, not just attorneys, could read almost everything that's filed on CaseNet.
Yep. If you have your account, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's CaseNet is just one example, but it's certainly a very good example of one aspect of the due diligence that landlords would want to go through, right?
Yes.
And like you said, like, you could be the most diligent property management company, landlord in town, but a life event, a death, whatever the case may be, can interrupt that stream of income, that rental income, and cause a rent and possession action to be required.
That's correct.
And the reason I even, we're very grateful to have you here, you know, and I'm a practicing attorney, but this area is really, really important to have someone on your side who is experience and can do this in an efficient way. I used that word earlier, and Kathy referenced the bulk filer. I think it is a testament to Kathy and her practice, you know, to have a bulk filing opportunity. If you're a management company, you're a property, if you're a property landlord in town, and you want someone to review your leases or manage tenants as they're in and out of the property, you know, Kathy would be a great resource for that.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
We definitely have certain things we like to see in a lease.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do you, you know, ideally you'd like your clients to come to you before the tenant is in the property, right? But that isn't what always happens.
No, it's not. Isn't that the case? All the time.
And all your tenants don't come to you with a beautiful, tightly written lease.
They don't. They don't. We have seen terms on the back of a paper bag, and
yeah, we agreed. We agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to put the ledger in writing, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Can you give us a nugget on something that you see very commonly left out of a lease that you would recommend? Hey, don't overlook this. This is one thing that you need to take into consideration when you are writing a lease.
Jury trial waiver. You want to have a jury trial waiver in a lease. If it's properly written and the tenant is aware of it, you might have a slightly larger font size for that paragraph. You want there to be an agreement that both sides waive jury trial in the event of any action under the lease. Not just an eviction, but a slip and fall or breach of lease or other thing. But you really want a jury trial waiver, because the thing about evictions is the court is set up to process them quickly. But asking for a jury trial slows that down. You have to get on a jury docket, get jurors. It's going to cost you a whole lot more to have an attorney do a jury trial for you than just a 15-minute rent and possession trial. Rent and possession jury trial is going to take at least a day, if not longer. And some of the clever lawyers that represent tenants, if they see there's no jury waiver, might ask for a jury trial just to buy some time. Now, there was an interesting change back in the laws recently. So now under rent and possessions, you can't get a jury trial on a case of first impression, but you can get it on the de novo. And you can get it on lawful detainer. An unlawful detainer, which is the second most common type of eviction, is generally referred to as the behavior eviction, because that's where you want them gone no matter what, because they're making fentanyl or meth or having wild parties or shooting up the parking lot. I just had one where there was carjacking. And
You sounded like you were talking from experience.
Yes. And that's just at my house. No.
Sounds like one hell of a party, too.
My number.
Yeah, exactly. But so you really don't want that to get slowed down with a jury request so they can be still manufacturing fentanyl.
Right.
You know. And bothering everybody else in the complex. And then all your good tenants move, and then it's really a bad situation.
So under
you definitely want that jury trial waiver.
Under the best circumstances, if you have the jury trial waiver, how quickly could you get someone evicted in either one of those instances?
Well, the first court date is going to be in about 3 to 4 weeks, depending on the judge and, you know, that kind of thing. And then if there is not a resolution at that first court date, you're supposed to get the first available trial setting pursuant to Missouri law. We usually have that within a week. Sometimes it's two. Then once you have the judgment, either at the first court date because you worked something out or because they didn't show up and you took a default, or at the trial because you won because you have me and I always win. No. because, you know, they owe the rent. And so... So I didn't realize there were sound effects. That's fun.
Absolutely.
And so you get the judgment. The judgment is final in 10 days. And at that point, if they're still not out, you file for the sheriff's execution. It kind of depends on where the sheriff is with that, but that takes about another week. And these days in the city and the county, the way the sheriffs do it is they show up and meet the landlord at the agreed date and time. The landlord has to have the ability to change the locks at that point. The sheriff puts everybody in the property out onto the street, searches for contraband like drugs or guns, and then supervises the landlord changing the locks. And the tenant is legally locked out of the property regardless of whatever stuff they have left inside and that kind of thing.
Hmm. And how is that? Is it? Do you have experience getting to that point in the show?
Yes, it does happen. I mean, I think that a lot of tenants are savvy enough to know that when the sheriff comes out and posts that last notice saying, I'm coming on Tuesday at 10 o'clock to put you out.
Now we mean
that it. It's time to call their cousin with the pickup truck and, you know, get their stuff out of there. But there are definitely some people who get locked out of all their stuff and, you know, that kind of thing.
And with the eviction process for the landlord or the management company, that it really doesn't end there, right? So you have to then go into the property,
clean it up, secure it
because now it's a vacant property,
haul all the stuff.
But you can't do anything for damages necessarily.
Well, you can't ask for damages in the initial rent and possession lawsuit, but you can go back later through collections or through a breach of lease lawsuit and sue if there's additional damages and that kind of thing. You can do that. You know, the problem, as I'm sure you can see, is that someone who's being evicted might not be someone that you're going to be able to collect the money easily from.
Yeah. If they missed out on the $1,000 rent payment, then they probably can't fix the $5,000 carpet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you got to find them.
Right.
You know, they've moved on down the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes we'll have people that will purchase investment properties and they want to purchase it under their personal name because they'll finance it under their personal name because that's going to allow them to get the most attractive terms for financing. And then after the fact, many times they'll say, okay, I want to transfer this over to an LLC or something to put a layer of protection on. However, as far as mortgage companies or real estate companies, they look at that as you're transferring ownership and the loan could be called due. How do you recommend, do you see it, what do you recommend when vesting an investment property as far as that? Like, would you always recommend owning it in a certain way? Or if you're going to get the most attractive terms by owning something or by financing it, at least under your personal name, can you do that and recommend other avenues that would provide protection for that person?
Yeah, I don't think it's good to own your investment property under your personal name. And in fact, I think if you own more than a couple of properties, you should probably have multiple LLCs or entities to put the property in. And even that doesn't protect you personally 100%. You know, like if you go in and decide to do the wiring yourself and then the place burns down, you did that yourself, so you're still personally liable. So we also like to have our friend insurance in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
and
important.
I think people who are going to do investing need good lenders like you guys do and need good brokers, you know, to help them with the insurance and those other needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, you started to touch on it, but like the real estate industry has so many players, right?
Yeah.
From, you know, the attorneys, obviously the management companies, landlords, property ownership, title companies, And then we kind of touched on whether it's insurance, board up companies, whatever the case may be. And you in your position in representing property owners and then, you know, property owners that are renting their facilities, you know, you touch on all these industries in some way. I've known you to be involved in real estate, you know, as long as I've known you, even though I've been kind of tangentially aware of you for years. So tell us about some of the organizations you belong to that touch on real estate in St. Louis. I know you're involved. And okay. Oh, by the way, today, I should mention, we are here. This is sort of our quasi, you know, BAMSL Real Property and Development Committee meeting, but we switched it up so we could have a great guest on today. So I interrupt, but please continue.
Well, first, Pete, let me say that I'm very grateful to you for taking the helm of this committee and reviving it with respect to BAMSL, because it was a great committee for many years. And then, I don't know, everybody got busy and it wasn't really active. And I'm glad to see that going again. I'm grateful to you for doing that.
Thank you.
So after BAMSL, let's see. I belong to a group that I really like. Really, it's a fun group. It's called Commercial Real Estate Women, CREW. And we have the best meetings. And it is somewhat people who are more oriented towards commercial rather than residential. But that's investment property, you know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. As a landlord, you know, that kind of thing. And we have the best meetings. We go to, like, we went to see the foundry before they started working on it.
Now you're talking.
And did a tour of it. I mean, we
So you're not having meetings.
There's always alcohol.
We're just meeting.
Okay, yeah. Got it in quotes.
And it's a great group, and men are certainly welcome. And I would encourage anybody who's interested in that to look up CREW, Commercial Real Estate Women, because we have a lot of fun, good meetings. Another group that I belong to is the St. Louis Apartment Association, which is management companies and owners of multifamily and rental property. And it also has a lot of the people in there, like you were just discussing, you know, the people who are going to do maintenance or, I mean, there always seems to be somebody new at those meetings that has like a new wrinkle on a new service they can do. Valet trash. Mm. You'll put your trash outside your door and they valet it down to the dumpster.
Great
or whatever.
Idea.
No
yeah,
kidding.
I'm like signing up for that if house. I'm in that building. Yeah.
That's amazing.
My wife has that.
It's called you.
Is it called you?
Yeah. And I'm trying to buy it. I have my kids do it, but it doesn't work as well.
That's funny.
There's another group that I like called the St. Louis Real Estate Investors Association, and they do a Zoom call once a month. I don't think I'm technically a member. Well, they do a Zoom call every Friday, and they do swap and sells and, you know, market each other's buildings to everybody and give each other recommendations for things like a locksmith or a plumber. And I speak on their Zoom call on the first Friday of every month, just so they can ask questions, ask the lawyer, you know, kind of thing. But there's a lot of groups like that. And I think because of the networky nature of St. Louis and the collegiality in the real estate profession, if you are getting involved in real estate, I would definitely recommend joining a couple of these groups, and you're going to not regret it. You're going to make good contacts and get a good recommendation for an electrician or find a building that you want that someone wants to sell. Those are great things.
Yeah, and like you said, even getting a recommendation for a contractor or an electrician or a licensed plumber, that's not easy these days.
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah. So, and people that are wanting the work and wanting to show up and, mm-hmm. you know, and have good reputation. So, yeah, I mean, that's involved. That's great. You've been doing that for many years and sounds like...
Since I was five.
Yeah, right. Well, because you've been doing this for 39 years.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I was trying to do the math, but five is what I came up with.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I mentioned this off the air, so to speak, is, you know, we've had, we're St. Louis guys, and a lot of our network just happens to be people that were born and raised here. Mm-hmm. but recently we've actually done a number of podcast episodes with people who were not born and raised here and who took, you know, a journey that led them here. And when you just rattled off the number of groups you've been involved in, talked about your, you know, your profession here, and your law firm here, it's always impressive to see how people can end up in a new environment. And I know you weren't only Pittsburgh to St. Louis, and that's it. You spent time elsewhere, isn't that right?
Yeah, I spent a couple of years off and on in Alaska.
Well, that's what people usually do before they come to St. Louis. They go to Alaska.
And so for those younger generations, before we had podcasts, we had this thing called radio.
Oh, wow.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. I can't spell it, but I've heard of it.
It was live. And I worked for a radio station called KABN, from our cabin to yours, and I had a radio show, and I covered the dog sled racing up there, the sprint races in Anchorage and the Iditarod.
Oh my.
It was really fun. I was a young single girl The ratio was very good. It was about 10 to 1.
Oh, man.
But as my girlfriends and I said, the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
Well, if you want to meet somebody, I would focus on the dog sled racing environment.
Yeah.
That's where
yeah.
it's going to be.
There's a
especially
lot of big,
in Alaska.
A lot of big hairy guys in Carhartt suits.
No, we can relate. We're Sicilian. Not about the big part. Yeah, so that's amazing. What? How yeah. long were you there and what brought you back here?
I actually took a break from law school to go up there because I was quite young. And then I came back to finish law school and then married my first husband, had children, you know. And St. Louis, right? Everybody says it. It's a great place to raise a family.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun here.
You had to have some guts to, you know, make yourself just go to Alaska.
Yeah, I had a friend who was up there.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, it just sounded fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I've never been there, but I need to.
Oh, you got to go. Yeah, definitely.
And then what's your, why the radio? Why the, they just.
Well, I actually was on my college radio station.
Okay.
When I was in college. And so I knew how to do it. And so there was a position up there. And so I said, I'll go do that for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. You're yeah. smooth behind the mic for sure.
Are your kids still here in St. Louis?
Yes. Well, two of them are. My older son, Carrie, is actually my office manager and does my book work. And my middle daughter, Bonnie Bosler, works for John Banjak and True Title. She's an attorney. And then my youngest, Andy, is in Michigan, and he is a psychologist and works with autistic children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So they're all off the payroll.
Yeah.
Proud mama,
nice. You
for
made
sure.
It.
Well done. So, you know, as far as you mentioned the title insurance industry, do you know because of John and stuff? Mm-hmm. Do you ever have to deal with title insurance?
At yes.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit because we deal with it. So it just caught my attention.
I know. Well, foreclosures are a little bit different than a traditional closing, right? But mm-hmm. I have to get title work run to do that, and I often get title work run for other kinds of the odd kind of real estate litigation things I do. Adverse possession, quiet title, you know, that kind of thing. I'm always ordering title reports.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely have a regular traditional closing like a transactional person would, but I'm always looking at those. Yeah.
Adverse possession, that's always a fun one. We don't, yes. It doesn't come up that much.
Yeah, I feel like I do a lot of them, but
is that
that's
right?
What everyone says. Yeah, and I do a lot of ejectments too.
Well, clearly you yeah. would run title on an adverse possession because you want to see who might claim some interest in the property,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I better know who I'm going to sue.
That's right. Everybody, yeah. You get the long front page petition.
Yeah, 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 yes, exactly. Yeah.
So today, so tell us, like, you know, this is your opportunity. So, you know, most people may already know you, but for those that don't, like, take a little bit of time to tell about what your ideal client would be, or, you know, or the breadth of your clients, or, you know, who you're welcoming in your doors.
You know, we're happy to talk to anybody. We represent a lot of clients, particularly a lot of landlords. We represent small landlords. We represent large landlords, big management companies. They're all good. Some of the smaller landlords don't have the systems in place that make it a little easier for the big management companies to do. Some of them, you know, the ledger's on a brown paper bag, you know, the lease maybe never really got mm-hmm. signed, you know, that kind of thing. It's challenging. We also represent a lot of people who are not originally from America. They came here from somewhere else.
Me too.
Yeah. To make, you know, American dream and all that. We have a Vietnamese guy. We have Bosnians. We have people from all over the world, and I like to think that we're welcoming to those people. Some of them don't have good English. Sometimes I have to tell them they have to come in because I can't understand them on the phone, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure that I'm going to be able to help them the way I want to. But it's very interesting. There are people who will buy rental property in St. Louis, people from other countries that I think local people don't want to touch. It's too much work. You know, it's a lot of work providing low-income housing. It's a lot of work.
Right.
Absolutely.
And these people are willing to buy that for family and fix it up and put mm-hmm. tenants in it and come around personally on the first of every month at 12:01 a.m. and collect the rent. But, yeah.
And also, one thing that's been gaining a lot of popularity is short-term rentals. Have you run across that? And what... If you have, what's something people should look out for in that aspect?
Well, you've stumped the panel here, Chris, because I don't know a lot about the Airbnbs. I know that, and I know that, you know, various municipalities in the city have passed ordinance with respect to them. I can tell you where I live in the Central West End, we had some landlords who weren't good landlords, and everybody knows who these people are because they've been in the news. But they had a building where they were renting Airbnbs, and it ended up with a rolling gun battle down Euclid.
Maybe, no biggie.
Frowned upon.
Rival factions rented side-by-side Airbnbs and got into a fight. You know, I don't know.
It happens.
It was horrible.
Central West End, so we don't need your address, but tell us what you think about the Central West End.
I love the Central West End. My building is like a freshman dorm for old people. Okay, we have all the restaurants,
I need to
bars,
get the address, yeah.
And fun things, and it's definitely empty nester heaven. I live very close to the Chase, so I can see what's playing at the movie. You know, I can go over and have dinner at the Preston, and we have a wonderful library, the Shafley Library, which, let me give a brief plug. Our library in the city of St. Louis, the giant big library, main mm-hmm. library downtown, is a lovely building. And that library system is having their fundraiser the first weekend of March, and it's going to be really fun. It's going to be really fun. I urge everyone to buy tickets.
That will be at the library?
At the big library downtown.
That is a really neat building.
It's a pirate theme.
Oh, gosh.
And they're going to have, like, sword fighters on the steps and, you know.
Are you performing in that, Chris? I can't remember.
I do that annually, yes. Yeah. I don't want to make a big deal about it, but yeah.
Yeah.
I like to do. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that because I love, you know, we always like to get people's personal real estate story a little bit. I mean, you were in Pittsburgh, then you spent time in Alaska, you came to St. Louis, and now you're in Central West End. What, like, to go from Alaska to Central West End, it seems like you're going to need an outlet to get some space too, right?
Yeah.
And what do you do for that? Do you have other land or property somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. My condo in the Central West End is actually almost 3,000 square feet.
Oh, that's very big. Good.
That helps.
And if that becomes a little cramped, what's right across the street? Forest Park.
Isn't that a gem? Yeah, for
right.
sure.
And any real estate is not going to be good if it's just that real estate. It's the environment, the parks, the libraries, the schools, you know, the arts, all the other things that add to your enjoyment of your personal real estate.
You may not be born in St. Louis, but you represent this town really well.
Well, I love Pittsburgh too.
There you go. Well, we love Pittsburgh too.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. Yeah. Most of our guests, it seems like.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we have an office on the Hill, and the city of St. Louis gets a bad rap a lot of times, but we are big proponents of it. And, you know, this town has great bones, as we like to say. And and I think some of those bones are being reinforced lately and making a name for themselves.
I agree. And have you ever been in a city this size that has so many great restaurants?
I don't even know what to do. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I could sit here. We actually are doing a couple podcasts coming up in some of the restaurants because there's just too many good places that need to be recognized.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. We have a couple we were trying to really stay in the city too. Not, and the county's mm-hmm. wonderful, but because mm-hmm. I live in the county, but I'm so impressed and proud of the city, what it features.
I think you should consider Bull Rush.
Okay. I don't know that one.
Bull Rush, it's in Midtown, Rob Connolly, and he is very interesting. In his, he's like a locavore, but it's really Missouri traditional foods. I mean, it's very interesting. And he gives you a description of how each food was sourced and everything and prepared before he does it. He has recipes from the 18th century. I mean, it's a very interesting experience, and the food is great.
That's awesome. Where's that?
I'd have to look it up. But
you said Midtown?
Midtown. Okay.
I mean, I never know what the border is between Midtown and Downtown West, but it's like right around there.
No kidding. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds very appealing. Yeah.
One more thing too I wanted to ask you about was do you focus on bankruptcy, or do you run across that much with clients?
You know, we do have sometimes the person that we're going after will file bankruptcy, and we are right now referring all of our bankruptcy work to a very good attorney named Angela Redden Jansen. We had a thing that happened about a year and a half ago where my husband got a lung transplant, and I mean, it was like a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to be a support person, which, ha-ha, right? I'm a lawyer. I have no nurturing qualities. But we had to quarantine for 90 days, and I realized going through
that
I wanted to expand my network of referring attorneys so that I could take care of things like bankruptcy, which nobody else in my firm was admitted in federal court, so they couldn't do it. So,
And are you talking for companies or individuals or both?
Both.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, certainly on the landlord side, I assume there might be cases where your tenant is seeking protection, and so you have to have some familiarity in some instances with how to make a claim if it's worth it.
Yeah, or ask for relief from the stay.
Sure.
If they're not paying and you need to get them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy is its own animal, right?
It is, yeah. It's in the big building.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no one size fits all. A lot of times we'll run into clients that, you know, maybe their credit's not good. They have high levels of credit card debt. They're behind on the mortgage and they're trying to figure out, oh, should I be financing? We're looking at it thinking, you know, I seems like bankruptcy would be an option, but we don't necessarily recommend that. But I think that, you know, we would leave it up to somebody that specializes in that. But I was trying to see if there's a, you know, when is the time to declare bankruptcy? It's probably different for everyone, but
I think it would be probably really good for people like that to consult with a bankruptcy specialist.
Sure.
to see.
It's not the black eye it used to be perceived as. And in fact, it's a tool available under the law.
Right.
Yeah. And also just thinking back on what you just said with the 90, so you guys quarantined for 90 days?
We did.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, they let up on it a little bit after about 6 weeks, but
yeah,
it was tough.
That is tough.
Well, when you get an organ transplant, they give you medication that knocks out your immune system. Mm. So, and you know, that was sort of, we were still having COVID and you know, that kind of thing. So we just had to be really careful. He still has to be careful, but I'm allowed out now.
There you go.
Yeah, well, sounds like you're taking advantage of it.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's definitely great to have you here today.
And I'm so grateful for the invitation.
Yeah. We'll do it again. And you know, I don't know, this episode was kind of chock full of important notes. So, you know, I should have told this at the beginning had I known. I should have said, everyone get your notebook out, because there's a lot of valuable information that you provided. And thanks for sharing that. And hopefully you don't get inundated with too many people asking you, like, about where's Bull Rush and how can I get to the St. Regis parties?
Those are probably your favorite questions.
Yeah, anybody who needs to call me with a question is welcome to.
Why don't you end with, you know, your contact information? And I'm going to just remind people, too, anybody, attorneys listening, looking for office space, Kathy has some attractive space available. But tell us how to get a hold of you.
My telephone number is 314-962-1115. Thank you.
Kathy Davis, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. We appreciate your time and look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks. Thank you.